Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin? Welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Christian Schiller. Now, this episode, I'm actually going to take a slight break from complete tech and focus a little bit more on some other aspects of topics I like to talk about, that being writing and games. This is an interview I did last summer, yes, with Rachel Lapido, who I discovered a blog of hers talking about how to edit roleplay books, how to edit board game manuals. This is something I'm often thinking about, not as much as I have in the past recently, but I have written my own articles. I have done some game editing. If you ever want a rules editor, take a look at christianschiller.com or, of course, Rachel's website as well. Anyway, it was a nice conversation, a little bit of a breather from tech. I hope you enjoy. Now, just a quick warning. There was some sort of high-pitched, whiny, rattling sound on Rachel's audio that I only just noticed when I came to editing this. I've done my best to remove it, but it's still there a little bit, and her voice will sound quite processed. But hopefully you enjoy the content still. Before we begin, there's just a few people at the door who've got some things they want to tell you. Then we can get stuck in. If you'd rather not hear these interruptions, then please support the show. You can find details in the episode and show notes. Out of all the services and tools I mention in these little ads, I think one of the ones I use the longest is SetApp. It's a Mac and iOS subscription service for applications from MacPaw. I had the great privilege of visiting MacPaw's office in Kyiv, way back in 2017, and SetApp, they've been running for some time too. I use very regularly, I use Timing, I use MindNode, I use Clean My Mac, I use NotePlan, Bartender, CleanShot, Receipts, Ulysses Chronicle, World Clock, Downy. These are just the ones I use. Oh, Better Touch Tool, I could go on. There's so many cool applications that if I was paying individually for, it would cost me a fair bit. But with SetApp, it's costing me just $10 a month. And they're always updating this. If you are in the European Union, then they also now have an alternative app store for iOS. So they got in early there as well. If you are interested in finding more and signing up yourself, then I have a link for you and you can earn me a little bit of commission to keep the show going. That is setapp.sjv.io/DAGYLQ. And of course, I will put that link in the show notes. Rachel, welcome. We are talking about something I talk about games a lot, but you've actually, I came across a post you wrote on a blog. You wrote about two things that I am a fan of: style sheets, style guides, et cetera, and role-playing games. So, yeah. What prompted you to write that, and what frustrations had you experienced to make you want to write it, I think?
So I was posting a lot on my LinkedIn page about working on TTRPG, so tabletop role-playing games. I've edited a number of them. And so one of the big things is creating style sheets for those games. And I found out that I actually love making style sheets for these games. And so I would talk about creating them and the problems that I was coming across, not problems, but just issues that I was trying to solve. And so someone from the CIEP saw my post and asked me to write a longer article for them.
And I have a few second guesses myself, but what are some common problems, some common offenses in a lot of tabletop role-playing books that normally, I don't know, maybe some people may not notice, or maybe they have noticed but never really identified as an issue. What are some common ones?
So I've worked on games where the creator will come up with a spell, for instance, and they'll name the spell something like, let's say, light. And then they will, several chapters afterwards, need to come up with another spell that does basically the same thing. And they'll call it something like Sunshine. And I'll say, hey, wait a second. Are these different spells? Do they do different things? And I had one of my clients, he said, oh, no, I just forgot what I called it the first time. So I just called it something else. And I can just imagine that as a player, that would be potentially frustrating because you think, well, is, you know, light, is that the stronger spell? Is it the weaker spell? Do they have different effects? And just, you know, if one person's saying, well, I cast light, oh, don't you mean, you know, sunshine? No, light. So I can see that leading to arguments at the table. So one thing that's important about style guides and style sheets, a style guide is generally what is used for a company. It's like sort of the overarching, which all their games are going to sort of abide by, but a style sheet is specific to that game. So I don't really create style guides. I'm creating style sheets, which are more personal to that project. And another problem, I mean, there's quite a few, lots of acronyms, so many acronyms for military games, just keeping track of what everything means and if that is the right spelling, the right letter combinations. So keeping track of all those in one place, that helps a lot. Also timelines. So depending on some games, so I recently worked on Blue Planet, which is a large climate fiction, hard sci-fi game. And a lot of it takes place in the future, obviously, but there's a big undergirding timeline that sets up the world. And so I started keeping a timeline just to keep everything making sense. Yeah. And there were instances where a city would be mentioned before it had been founded, events happening before they could have happened. So by having a timeline, I would look at a chapter and then I could refer to the timeline because I was getting the chapters in pieces. And this was over 2 years. So it's, and it was written by different people. So it was very easy. It's so easy for people to just sort of forget when things take place or what characters are named. And also sometimes character names changed. My client would change some of the names and then older drafts wouldn't have the changes. So I kept also a change log for that particular. That was the biggest style sheet I've ever done. It's over 140 pages. It's really big. It's really big because the game itself is over 600 pages. So it kind of, there were so many details. There were a lot of different companies, like fictitious companies, and all of those companies had products that they made. And all those products had names and they had traits and capabilities. So I had to wrangle them into a place. And my client loves using Latin names. And so I have no training whatsoever in Latin, but I started using Latin dictionaries just to double check. And, you know, 90% of the time he was right on with his terms, but about 10% of the time it would be not quite right. So I would have to change it and then just having it in one place so I could look at it if it was referred to in another chapter. Just, it saved me a lot of headaches. And I think that he found it helpful and he was able to give it to the other people who were working on it.
It's interesting because you've called this a style guide. I mean, in some ways, in my mind, what you're describing that you've done for some of these games is more like a development editor role or a line editor, I think, in some companies they're called. And in my mind, a style guide is a little bit less work than what you're describing. It's just some of the terminology. It's maybe... Yeah, formatting, it's some grammar rules and things like that. Yeah, I just wonder why you settled on the word of style sheet, because it almost feels to me like you're underselling what you're doing with that term.
I guess so. For other projects that I've worked on, the style sheet is a lot slimmer. It's just a few pages. It is really just looking at spelling, what terms are in italics, what terms are in bold, looking at just keeping acronyms in one place. For Blue Planet, because I was doing a line edit on it, I needed to have this very intense style sheet just so that I could keep track of everything and keep everything to the same continuity, the timeline. So it definitely was a lot of work creating it and maintaining it. And I haven't done anything nearly that big for any other projects, but it's sort of taught me what I need to look for when I work on new games and what sections I need to consider to have in there.
Yeah. Now, there are obviously in other industries, so I've done a similar role for some smaller projects, but most of my kind of style guide, style sheet editing is more in the tech space, where it's equally the same problem, but probably maybe a little less for different reasons. But, you know, the tabletop role-playing world is relatively speaking, a small industry, especially in comparison to the tech industry. So is there anything, any kind of tools or processes you could recommend to people if they didn't really have the time or resources to bring someone like you on board, but they wanted to maybe be a bit better at this? Are there any kind of established bits of advice you'd give them to try and keep on top of some of these ideas?
I think the best thing is just to have some place, some central document where you're keeping track of things, where you're keeping track of ability names and NPC non-player character names and location names, and then making sure you're sharing it with everyone else who's working on it, especially, you know, people who are creating the maps or creating the illustrations, just so that everyone has the same knowledge, so you don't have a blonde character being rendered as a redhead, for instance, by the illustrator. Not that I've come across that, but I'm sure things like that have happened.
Yeah. And do you wonder, like, I wonder, because there are actually some, you mentioned in the post that you're doing role-playing games and fiction. Now, definitely in the fiction space, there are some fairly well-established tools that can help with this, like Scrivener and Aeon Timeline, for example, which also connect with each other. So you can kind of keep track of some things a bit better. And in the video game space, there are a lot of these kind of options. Some are custom in-house and some exist. All the names are escaping me right now, of course, but I have tried some of them in the past. But I think I know from a lot of people who I've seen writing games, they're often just using Word. Which, or Google Docs, which is, to be honest with you, not optimal for this kind of process. So if someone wanted to try something more down the path of, shall we say, I don't want to use the word professional, but better optimized writing tools for long form projects than something like Word, but Scrivener or something like that is maybe too expensive. I feel like I've seen some kind of RPG specific options appear that a lot of them popped up around the kind of virtual gaming time as well, where GMs could actually keep track of worlds and timelines and things. And have you seen anyone try to use those for the actual writing process as well? It's something that's a little bit better at gathering together those entities that in a more intelligent way than just a big long text file, I suppose.
So I haven't had anything where it created in a program like what you're talking about. What I would say is that I use a program called Perfectit, which is an add-on for Word.
Okay.
And what that does is, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it acts as sort of kind of like a macro, a series of macros, and also a very high-tech spell check. So you can put in terms to look for it, and you can have it be, they have an edition of it that uses the Chicago Manual style. So you can basically click it and say, here's this document. I want this document to adhere to the Chicago Manual style, which is what a lot of novels in America use as their main guide. Yep. And Perfectit will kind of go through and say, well, we don't like the spelling of this word, or consider changing, you know, using serial commas here because Chicago uses serial commas. So that is something that, now, I use that. None of my clients have ever used that. But what's funny is that, honestly, I'm so used to working with Word documents. The problem sometimes, I've had issues with clients sending me a file where they created it all in a PDF and with all the illustrations already in, all of the formatting done, but it hasn't been edited. Yep. So then I have to kind of try to get the text out of there so I can run all my tools, be able to have the text. And it's just, it can be tricky sometimes to get the text out of the PDF, even with tools like I use Wondershare now for PDFs instead of Adobe, but like just converting it can be sometimes not work. So I'm happy to have, when they send me a Word document, I'm happy when it's a Word document and it's not a PDF, honestly.
Finally, and does some, like, I'll tell you some of the things. It's interesting to hear what you're using because I use some equivalent things, but in very different spaces and tool chains because I tend to avoid Word. If the past year was the first time I'd used Word in about 10 years, and I was very happy about that. But does it also let you track some of those other things you said about that, you know, the Chicago Manual of Style is obviously a kind of broad guide, but then you're talking about also, oh, well, this particular document uses this term. And can it spot, well, they use this term, and then they use this term. Is that the same thing? Does it also let you kind of have those custom things?
I can create my own styles within it. And so it can, ask it to check for specific things, for specific spellings, making sure words are in italic, not in italic, stuff like that, definitely.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, it's one of the big negatives of Scrivener is it doesn't really have anything like that. It used to have a plugin infrastructure that would have allowed for something like that. And some of the options out there, which maybe Perfected is using, because a lot of tools do, is called Language Tool. And it used to have options for that, but they vanished, I think, just because it's a small company and maintaining a framework for allowing extensions that is also secure and et cetera, is a lot of work for a small team, I suppose. It's interesting to hear, though, because having come from the software space, I actually help contribute to a tool that does something very similar, but it's mostly aimed at people using text editors and a lot of kind of developer-focused options. But it does some very similar things. And I've only ever really known about like the free open source and then big commercial ones that you have to pay tens of thousands of dollars for. And it's kind of good to hear that there is one that exists slightly in the middle. And people have often asked for plugins for Word and things like that. And there's just not been the desire or the skills for anyone in the community to do that. But so it's interesting to hear that there are some alternatives, because I think a lot of people have heard of things like Grammarly, which also offers at a certain level some of those options as well. But I've never been able to test them, you know, that ability to really override and say, no, this is correct in this case. This is a particular way we spell it or something like that.
I will say...
So yeah, it's interesting to hear.
And Perfected is among the copy editor, like especially the freelance copy editor folks like myself, a lot of us do use Perfected and we love it. And it's a part of our editing process. I have a PC. You can run it on a Mac. It sometimes will not run as smoothly on a Mac. So I just do want to just say that in case someone was considering that.
Yeah, I feel like these worlds do kind of divide at a certain point, don't they? I think that's always the sort of tool chains you get used to and thinking they're just like everybody uses, and then you switch to a different platform. You're like, but it's also interesting. I've done some like board game manuals, and it's very similar that people send you like the finalized proof with all the images, all the layout, and you're like, well, this needs to change. It's going to, you know, you've already, this is not HTML. Things can suddenly just, it's funny. We've got so used to this kind of web delivery, we forget that there are certain industries where print is still dominant, and board games, yes, definitely. Role play games, mostly. Or people want something that looks pretty, you know, so it tends to get laid out at a certain point. And the desktop publishing tools have some kind of proofing ability.
It's not nearly robust enough.
Ideal.
And you also can't, Word, you have track changes, which lets you see the changes. that you've made. Yep. You don't have that in something like Adobe, where you can see really the changes that have been made. And that can be really make it hard if you have multiple people on a team and you can't see what's been done and what's been changed. So,
I feel like they do or they did at a certain point. But this has always been that interesting frustration with a lot of this kind of process, especially when you are dealing with people who are independent creators or small teams and have just kind of cobbled together the way they work. And, you know, these sort of touch points between systems and tools of collaboration have eternally been problematic. You know, it's like, oh, but I worked in this thing, so I generated a PDF, and you say, oh, but what am I supposed to do with a PDF? And then so you just cover it with annotations and then send it back, and then they have to extract all those and put it back into it. And it's just like, you know, there's still so many points where where it can still be unsolved. And sort of surprisingly so.
I think it's important for people who are creating games or working on games that if you are going to bring in a copy editor or a proofreader, to try to get them with a copy editor who's going to be working on the copy and making bigger changes, to give them a copy if it is like a text document instead of giving them the finalized version with all the pictures. And stuff. It is helpful to see the pictures too, but to give them something that they can easily work on, because when I'm working on a PDF, it takes me about twice as long because I have to like highlight the thing that I want to change. And then I have to say like, change this comma to a semicolon instead of just in Word, I just change it and it's tracked with track changes on. They know exactly what I've done.
Yeah. It's funny because I'd help a friend do one of these, and his are usually because he uses that, is it Homebrewery? I think that kind of outputs things that look like D&D books for DM's Guild. And it's basically a web-based editor. And then you get kind of this finished looking PDF. So he's obviously using something that's free and optimized, but it does mean that the output that you or I would deal with is looks final. I don't know. He doesn't seem to mind.
I mean, it depends a lot on what your end goal is. If you're making a book for just the people in your campaign, then you're not going to be so worried about there being typos and stuff.
People do okay out of DM's Guild. I think it's kind of like self-publishing. You know, you can have
it. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So just, I think people like you and I kind of understand that good copy editing, style guides, et cetera, are good things to do. But even in the software world, where I've done a lot more work in this space, you're endlessly having to justify it. You know, oh, well, making these changes, and someone's like, so what? Does it make any difference? So firstly, I would like to ask you, what if someone says to you, why should I bother? What would be your justification to the readers, to the community, that you would say, here's why you should go through this extra level of review? You know, why bother to the creator in the first place?
I think it's the biggest thing is, do you want the game to be good? Really, when it comes down to it, I feel that you need to have someone else working on it. You can self-edit, but even copy editors will say it this a lot when they write their own things. It's so hard to edit yourself, and it's bringing in a second person, especially if it's someone who has a slightly different viewpoint than you. I have found a lot of things that are problematic in content, things that are inadvertently, it's almost always inadvertently, like sexist or racist or could be seen as homophobic. Mm-hmm. And just by having someone like me looking at it and pointing this out and saying, this is going to alienate this group of people who you want to buy your book. And a lot of times just coming up saying, hey, you know what, this continuity doesn't make sense and people are going to be confused at what's going on. Whereas because you've created it, it's in your head, everything generally makes sense, but you might not have put all of that on the page. And an editor can see, well, there's a scene here missing in the backstory of your game. You know, why did this character do this? When earlier you said that they couldn't do something.
Yeah. And I mean, we've all probably got examples of RPG books, especially if you've read, that were hard to follow, and scenario books as well, hard to follow, confusing, things missing, things inconsistent, index makes no sense, table of contents makes no sense. I think we can all think of dozens of examples of ones that annoyed us. From books you've worked on, did you get any feedback from the client or from their customers that, oh, this was actually really easy to follow? I had less problems. I noticed, you know, was the work noticed?
Oh, yes, definitely. So with the big game that I worked on, Blue Planet, because I was keeping track of things, there were multiple times where I would say, you know, you say the population of this city here, you say it's 3,000. I have on my style sheet that it's actually 10,000. And he often would go, oh my gosh, you're right. I completely forgot. Let me fix that. Mm. Or a lot of times, like, I meant to put that in, but I didn't. So thank you for catching that. So, I would say definitely that my clients have been very happy at the things that I catch, the things that I point out. And just sometimes the ideas that I'll have for, you know, when I'm editing, if I see something, I'm like, you know, you might want to add something here or add something there. They can take my advice. They don't have to take my advice, but a lot of times they are happy to have it. And just to have, that's sort of my reaction as a reader and as someone who plays RPGs.
And did you hear any feedback from any readers of those books as well?
Yes. So I worked on the Stardew Valley board game, the official board game for that. And So I belong to a number of editing groups online. And one of the people in the groups was saying that she played the game. And she actually, it was such a lovely shout out to me. She complimented me for the editing of the rules because she said it was very easy to follow. So yes, that has happened. I've had people who have read the stuff that I've edited and they have gotten in touch with me and said that they found it helpful. And so that's great.
Yeah. Okay. And ignoring games you've worked on, what are some of the best experiences you had with manuals on games? What are some good examples that have done it well?
I would say something like, even just looking at like Settlers of Catan, I think that is a game where it's very clear, it's well laid out, it's not, you know, a massive manual to read to get through. So I would say something like that can be helpful. And I know that some board games are now, I feel like you're seeing more board games that are really big and there's like, you have to, you know, go through and that's great, but it is nice to have games where if you're visiting family and it's, you know, 9 o'clock at night and the kids are asleep and you want to play a board game, you don't necessarily want to pull out something that you need to read the rules for an hour to get.
Yeah. Yeah. And any roleplay ones that you've found have been particularly good or less bad?
So I've really only in person role-played Dungeons and Dragons. So, I mean, there is a reason I do like the way that Wizards of the Coast lays out their games. I sometimes find myself, when I'm working on another game and the way that they treat the spells or the abilities is different. Yeah. I'm like, why can't they just do it the way Wizards of the Coast does it? Now,
I think it has such a legacy.
I think it's a bias on my part because that's what I've grown up with. And so I kind of sort of see that as the default, but I do like, what I like about the way they do it is that they don't capitalize as much stuff. I find that there's a lot of games where they're basically, it's like German. It's just every noun is capitalized and everything is important, which means nothing is really standing out. So I like the way that Wizards of the Coast does it.
Yeah. I know what you mean with that. Yeah, there's this capitalization. It's also interesting, though, I think Dungeons & Dragons has this advantage that the system is kind of so well known that sometimes even if something is not clear, generally around a table, you have one or two people who just know the answer anyway. Like the number of times I played Dungeons & Dragons and had to look at the manual in recent years is quite uncommon. You know, you just kind of know the system. I think spells and things like that are usually where it becomes slightly less clear. A couple of follow-up questions. It just got me thinking, what's your perspective on, you know, I've noticed a lot of the indie games, especially recently, always want to include things that seem duplicated. Like so many roleplay games now always include a reasonable amount of content on what is a roleplay game. And you kind of, I sort of start to wonder, like, how much is that needed? And I sometimes also wonder that with so many games, this feels like there's a need to pad the content. And I don't know if this is to do with Kickstarter or something like that, you know, to give people value. They feel like they have to fill it. And sometimes it's not always necessary. You know, there's information that has been reproduced so many times in so many books. Do we need to keep saying it? I don't know. Maybe that's just a personal feeling.
I think
I'm not sure.
That I can see what you're saying about sometimes, like, you know, when you're explaining just the basics of how it works. But I do think in some games that I've worked on, they'll talk about safety rules. And I think that sometimes, that's where things that you can do to make players more comfortable around the table so that if people are approaching a topic that someone is uncomfortable with, they can sort of like hold up a card and let everyone at the table know that this is a topic they don't want to be talking about. And I think that something like that is sometimes nice to have just so, because I think that there's more people coming into TTRPGs. And that especially, I think, a lot more girls and women and people who, I think that in popular culture, we've really seen these games as being more for young men and men. And I think that by having these rules and explaining like safety rules and explaining what the games are, I think it's helping to bring in women and girls and non-binary people to the table, which I think is amazing. And I think that we need to be seeing more of that. But I do get that it is sort of like, I don't know if you're familiar with the Babysitter's Club books. I'm just thinking there's this series of books. It's a big American thing.
I've heard of them. I've not.
There are these, you know, like middle grade books for kids. And the first it's actually, I think the second chapter of every book is basically the same. They're explaining who the characters are, what the Babysitter's Club is, where they live, all of that jazz. And so if you're a frequent reader of them, like I used to be, you would just kind of skip that chapter. So I think that if you can have it in such a way that it's easy to skip and you're not including important information that's unique to that game, then why not include it if you can do something just short and just explain just the basics to bring in new players?
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of wondered it because I feel like even with the safety rules, like there's a lot of established methods that are written somewhere. And I always wonder, is it better just to say, look here instead of reproducing
it? If you point it out.
It's very hard. I think because I come from a software world, where an HTML world, where you can kind of chop and change more regularly, but with print, of course, you have to sort of make this decision. Do you bundle all of these, this is a very software term, but all these dependencies together at the same time, or do you let people discover them? Or, you know, it's a, yeah. And then there's the maintenance of that, but I don't know. I sort of feel like a lot of RPG books have too much content these days. I'm not really sure why there is. Like you said, you have a 600 page book and I'm just kind of like, do you need that? I don't know. I'm not sure. Because at the end of the day, it's just a framework for sitting around a table and playing with people. And 90% of that experience is people kind of figuring it out on the spot. And the book almost becomes a little less important. You know, I don't know.
For Blue Planet, which was smart, was that they released a quick start guide. Ahead of the Kickstarter campaign. So that was about 40 or so pages. Yeah. And I worked on that. And so I think doing something like that, I agree with you that it can be a little bit like, it's like basically phone book size games sometimes are coming out. And there is something to be said about doing something that's smaller and easier to grasp and putting that out first. And then if there's the demand going, you don't have to put everything in the first book. You can just sort of stagger your releases.
And I mean, financially, that is usually a better idea.
Oh, printing anyway, costs, you could, and shipping costs.
No, but also expansions and things like that. This is something we've been thinking about with board game design. There's always so many things you can do, but at a certain point you have to say, expansion. it's a business decision as well. It's like, well, we could actually do better in the long run by saving this for a later date. I don't know. There's a balancing act. Anyway, we're getting into kind of more the meta conversation. Well, actually, no, we're getting above the meta. I think what we're discussing was the meta conversation. We're getting to the business conversation. But on the subject of business, if people are interested in bringing you on a project, where can they find more?
So you can go to my website, which is pretty simple, honestly. It's one of those things that I'm like, I need to update it. And then I just kind of keep getting busy with projects. But so it's rachellapido.com, and I'll spell that. So it's Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, and then Lapido, L as in Larry, A, P as in Peter, I, P as in David, O-W.com. And that's my...
And what is very interesting is I actually just jumped onto your website to have a look, and I do believe on my shelf I have one of the projects you worked on, which is Oath. And it's actually interesting because you also did some stuff for Roots. And that, because they made some interesting decisions on their manual about splitting it out to that kind of playthrough versus the reference. And I've always been a little uncertain of it, but I liked the fact that they tried something different. So I don't know if that was your decision.
No, that was not my decision. They had that all. I thought it was very interesting. And what was great about working on that was that I didn't have to create a style sheet from scratch. They had already put stuff, they had really thought about what they wanted ahead of time. And so.
Yeah, the company is sort of has this identity already visually.
And it was so great to see some of the art ahead.
It's interesting.
Because I love the art for those games. And I would just be like,
it's always the same artist.
It's really good art. And that sometimes, that was all like, no, some of it was PDF and some of it was as Word documents, but that was an easy project to work on in terms of just the technical, what I needed to do technically on it. So they have, they know what they're doing, leader games.
They understand it, I've been thinking of some time putting together a post around this of like these different approaches and that company.
Later,
is it? Yeah. Is one company that always does things a bit differently. There's some others I've come across where they try to drip feed the rules to you. And some players like that, some players don't, you know, of kind of summing up these different ideas. But yeah, haven't got around to it. But anyway, I got distracted there because I spotted top of the list a game I actually see.
I mean,
it's
always so cool when someone has something or read something or played something that I've worked on.
And I have played Root, and it's super popular, but I don't like it as a game, but people do love it. So it's also so it's probably better known than Oath, to be honest with you. So there's another good example. That game is very popular. So yeah. Cool. All right then, Rachel. Well, I enjoyed the conversation. It was an opportunity to combine two interests. And
I was thrilled to be on here. Thank you. You too.
Take care. So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianscheller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.